The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Tonight's episode of Wrestling Night in Canada is dedicated to the memories of Mr. Wrestling 2 and Adam Bueller.
You're listening to Wrestling Night in Canada on the Shining Wizards Network with your hosts, Matt Copper, Dustin Maruca, and Snowy White.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to an exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. This is episode number 7, and I'm Snowy White.
And I'm Matt Copper.
And I'm Dustin, or as everyone calls me, Dougie.
Hey, bros, what's going on?
No, not much, man. Or actually a lot, but we'll get to that.
yeah. But more importantly, like, with all of the stuff that's going on in the wrestling world right now, the important thing is what's going on in the real world. Everyone is happy and healthy and safe from the Carino and all that. Everyone's doing well.
Yeah, I think we're allowed to call it COVID-19 now. I think that
okay.
The Wrestle Talk guys have been doing it, so I think it's okay.
Okay. All right. Well, it was kind of fun while it lasted, coming up with these cool synonyms for it and all that.
Yeah.
But hey.
Corbin-19.
Yeah. Anyone who has been, first of all, if you're tuning into us the first time, hello, this is, and welcome, and thank you so much for finding us and tuning in. Hopefully we can live up to any expectations that you may have. For our listeners that have been with us since the beginning or the last couple episodes, you might have noticed something is a little bit awry. For those first 6 episodes, we had a fourth horseman of the apocalypse in, you know, our good buddy, Mr. Mike Mason, who was kind of holding the hosting reins for those. And unfortunately, you know, like, this is fun, but this is just a hobby, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
You know, real life kind of gets in the way, and that has to take priority. So, unfortunately, Mr. Mason had to step down. And then we were kind of wondering, like, okay, well, what are we going to do? Because we were the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And I'm like, well, do we get a fourth? Do we just go with the three and all that? And I'm thinking, and you know, maybe we won't actively search out a fourth. That fourth will find us. So since Ole Anderson has left, that leaves us with Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, and Arn Anderson. So we just have to wait until our Lex Luger appears, I guess, at some point or another. I guess that's kind of the way to look at it.
Which ones are we? Am I Tully Blanchard? Because I would think Dustin would be Arn Anderson, because if he shaved his head, he would look pretty much exactly like him.
He definitely would be the enforcer of this group.
Yeah. No, he is the security guard. So
that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Snowy, you got the white hair and the.
And I'm the oldest. Yeah,
you're the Ric Flair.
Woo! Yeah. Okay, I'll take it.
And so that means, Matt, that means your face is on Sean Spears' shorts.
Oh,
gross.
worst under ruse ever. Holy jeez. Yeah.
Enough of that.
Yeah. A lot has been going on just the last couple days in the wonderful world of pro wrestling, which we kind of had a few ideas. What are we going to talk about? What are we going to do? Well, let's go with this. But then boom.
Yep.
I remember for our brother program, Radioactive Metal, here on the Shining Wizards Network, we did a lot you know, we did a lot of coverage of the Me Too movement because that was, you know, that was very relevant within the music world. Now it's this, the same idea is kind of infiltrated in, unfortunately, into the pro wrestling world with the speaking out campaign, which seems to be getting a lot of traction, and a lot of people are coming out and saying, well, this is my story, this is what's happening, and it's not showing, you know, our world in a very good light.
No, right, unfortunately not.
You kind of air all these allegations that are coming out, and we're going to go into them a little deeper later on, but unfortunately it's, yeah, oh, it's kind of like I have a tendency of believing this one, but this one, we'll wait and see and all that. But either way, it's scary.
It's easy to be skeptical about your favorite wrestler not being a piece of shit, but unfortunately, it's smoke. Being on television is just smoke and mirrors. You only see what they show you, and
that's excellent. That's the perfect way to mention it. They say never meet your heroes.
Yeah, I know. And there's a lot of names, or a few names on that list that I really wish weren't on there, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's unfortunate. Like I wish it weren't the way it was, but It is, and
it's up to us. It's up to us, people, programs like this and others, like, to bring attention to this and call this stuff out. And we just have to deal with it.
Hopefully the end result out of all of this is that the wrestling world becomes a safer place for everybody involved.
Oh, for sure. Oh,
yeah. That's the one thing that I can hopefully reassure to everybody who spoke out was that there will always be good people in the world if they can hold on to one thing. I know it seems like a impossibility right now with all the bad things going on, and it seems like nobody's good, but there will always be good people, and if you can hold on to one thing, that's it, in my opinion. Sure.
Well said. But to get us to all of this that's going on, it looks like it just keeps piling up, because just the last couple days, we lost some people within the wrestling world, that some a young upcomer and a veteran, you know, a pioneering veteran has left us and all that. But first of all, Ducky, I want you to tell us who Adam Buehler is, because once again, I hate to say it, my ignorance is showing with some of these indie guys and all that.
Adam Buehler was on the deathmatch scene. He wrestled in like IWA, and I think he did a couple don't remember if he did a couple GCW shows or not off the top of my head. But I found out who Adam Buehler was through the Murder, Death, Kill Club on Facebook that I joined.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically Murder, Death, Kill is just a fan club on Facebook that just shows off a bunch of, like, crazy spots. And they put some full matches up. And they actually do their own podcast thing called The Death Hour, where they bring deathmatch people on and they talk about their career from like start to now, and it's really cool. And found Adam Buehler through there because he's on it, he's a part of it, and he put a bunch of his matches up all the time, and I would watch them. And unfortunately, his cancer came back, and it took him in like 3 days.
Holy jeez!
Yeah, that's crazy. That's unfortunate, but.
Yeah. On the opposite, on the flip side of this, we lost a legendary veteran in one Mr. Wrestling 2 that, fortunately, you know, he went out natural causes. He was in his 80s and all that. Now, you guys might not necessarily know who Mr. Wrestling 2, he was kind of like an era before you guys, but he was very over as in the territories as one of the masked wrestlers.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big in Mid-South. I think, believe he did some work in Memphis as well. Just recently on Jim Cornette's, one of his podcasts, he was talking about, and this is kind of relevant to why you're going to see, why you see Excalibur on Dynamite, why you see him in a mask, okay, on TV, in the broadcast booth. Like, why does a guy need to do that? Okay, well, wrestling too, okay, years ago when he was active and all that, Jim Cornette recently said when he was doing a program with his Midnight Express against Magnum TA and Wrestling 2, they worked for 2 months together almost every night. 2 was so dedicated to the kayfabe and keeping his face hidden and always wearing the mask, it took a couple months before Cornette actually saw what Wrestling 2 looked like without his mask. And you work with the guy every day. Like, two would put on his mask driving to the venue or whatever. He'd put on his mask a couple blocks before getting to the arena. Just wear it the whole time. Yeah, wear it the whole time. And then drive off with the mask still on and all that. Like, that was his character. That was his character. And he's
dedicated to kayfabe.
It very much so, very much so. It was obviously, you know, that was the mentality in the territories back then. And so now when I see, the first time I saw Excalibur, you know, with a mask on in the broadcast booth, I immediately thought that. It's like, okay, this is an homage to those kayfabe mask wrestlers and all that. Because I assume, like, Excalibur was a masked wrestler in the indies or something.
Yeah, I think he had to retire from injury.
Okay. And instead of saying, you know, I'm the former Excalibur, now I'm Bob Smith without the mask, he kept the gimmick and all that. And that's amazing. I think it's a fantastic idea. And yeah, that's it. It's that. And of course, radioactive metal. Of course, Wrestling Night in Canada, we give our condolences to the Wrestling 2 families and to the Bueller family and friends. That is too bad. Okay, here's a bit of homework for us. You guys go find some Wrestling 2 matches out on YouTube. I'm going to see what I can find for some Adam Bueller and see what was going on there.
Absolutely.
Did you guys watch Backlash?
I did.
Oh, okay, because I didn't.
Okay.
Okay. So, well, I'm basically going to turn the whole kit and caboodle over to you guys. Although I've got a thing or two I do want to say, but yeah, I'm going to let you guys take this one.
All right. Well, for starters, the United States title match was pushed to the pre-show, which, and it was given a whopping, what, 7 or 8 minutes?
Yeah.
Holy jeez.
Yeah.
Vince.
Just proving that he doesn't care about either of those competitors or the United States Championship as a whole.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So what's all, okay, this was, the focal point of this card was the greatest match ever.
Yeah, the greatest wrestling match ever.
Okay, sorry, go on.
Yeah, it was the greatest wrestling match ever with Backlash at the very bottom. that's how it was advertised. But we'll have to get to that a little bit later. But like, the most of the card I thought was quite underwhelming. Like, mm-hmm. having the United States Championship match on the pre-show, that was the first mistake, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It was, like, for a title that's been around, like, for people who don't know, the United States Championship in WCW and NWA, predates the Intercontinental title. So that title's been around, I think, since 1974,
The U.S.?
The United States Championship, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a few on the Intercontinental, which was 79, Pat Patterson having that winning that tournament in Puerto Rico and all that. And it's like, yeah, when did that happen, huh?
But the United States Championship, I believe, originated at NWA in 1970, around like the mid-1970s.
Right.
It does predate the Intercontinental title by a few years, but the way it's just been treated, I don't know. I can't get on board with that. I think it should be like the most important that title has ever felt was a few years ago, or maybe in 2014, when John Cena had it and he was doing the open challenges.
Right, right.
That actually made it feel important again. Yeah. And that was we saw the debut of Kevin Owens on the main roster because of that, and Sami Zayn as well, I believe. And we got some great matches out of it. I'm not gonna lie. And for coming from John Cena, that's saying something, in my opinion.
Well, the U.S. title, it wasn't a McMahon creation. Okay, so it's always going to be the redheaded stepchild of the secondary titles.
That's why Starrcade is a house show and not a main pay-per-view anymore.
That in itself is a travesty.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. So yeah, I think there's just too many titles as it is right now.
I think there's 18 in WWE right now.
Holy shit.
Like going across both main roster brands, NXT, NXT UK. I think there's like 18, 19.
See, I don't even know them all.
No, I think I thought about them, like I counted them by hand one day. It's like there's four tag team titles across those four brands. There's four world titles, three mid-card titles, four women's championships, the women's tag team championships, the 24/7 title, the cruiserweight title. Yeah, there's a lot.
Holy geez. Oh, that's why titles don't mean as much. You know, I don't mean to get up on the snowbox just yet, but that's why they just don't mean as much like they used to. Like the U.S. title at one time, you know, in the mid-80s or whatever, at the height of that title, it was arguably the fourth most important title in all of North America.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like it was, so... Times definitely have changed over the last 30 years and all that. So maybe that's a wake up call to get rid of some of these titles.
Yeah, I doubt that they're ever going to do that. They feel the need that they have to have like a certain level of a championship on every brand to separate that brand from, or to have like complete separation aside from the women's tag team championships.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think there still should be like one like main women's championship, and it should just be defended on all brands,
and a main world championship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now that NXT is
gold belt, and just fuck it, just defend it on all the brands.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's how the brand split originally worked, was that the women's champion and the world champion would be on both shows, but. Yep. Well, we all know how that's how we got the World Heavyweight title and the Divas title, so.
Well, maybe here's a future turnbuckle talk. We're going to sit down and we'll realign all of the titles to kind of what makes sense within WWE. WWE. So what else was defended? Like, you guys are telling me, like, because I didn't know anything about this card going into it.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the others?
There was a Raw Women's Championship match between Asuka and Nia Jax, which ended in a double countout. So nobody lost, nobody won.
And did anyone get hurt, like legit?
No,
Asuka did not get hurt. That was disappointing because I heard originally that Asuka was supposed to go over strong in that match. Like, she was actually supposed to beat Nia Jax clean in the middle of the ring, but the day of the show, because Paul Heyman's no longer the showrunner for Raw, Bruce Pritchard is, they changed the end of that match to a double countout the day of the show, which is not what I would have done personally. I would have gone in this direction.
Very dumb.
Yeah, it made nobody look strong, and yeah, it was bad move in my opinion. They had an opportunity to make Asuka look really big or really good coming out of that pay-per-view, and well,
okay. Do you think maybe we're kind of at the point where it's like, okay, we have to do something with Jax? Like, maybe she wasn't ready to come up to the main roster, and she's hurting people left and right, and it's been going on for a while now. It's just like, or is it the influence of her family where it's like, well, we can't really send an Anoli down to, you know.
Yes, you can.
Well, of course, yeah, you definitely should, because she's hurting people and all that. I think maybe it's time to, you know, she needs to go back.
Yeah, nepotism, I think, plays a huge part in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Well, you look at like Roman Reigns or the Usos; they're both safe workers.
Mm-hmm.
But Nia Jax, though, yeah, she has a history of hurting people, giving people concussions, or in Kairi Sane's instance, cutting open her head by pushing her into the steps.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and before she was injured, she had a reputation for that, and even after she came back after a full year, I think she had double ACL surgery. I believe
ACL reconstruction. Yeah.
Yeah. So she had time to recover and train, yet she still works incredibly stiff, and it's unfortunate. But now they seem to be pushing Asuka in the direction of feuding with Charlotte Flair.
same thing. You zoom in on Charlotte, it looks like
Rick. Yeah. I know that's. And we probably said this on the show, but there are just times she looks too much like her dad. Too much. Yeah. Okay, so what was what were some of the title matches?
There were, aside from that, I don't think there was a SmackDown tag title match, if I remember correctly. I don't think.
I don't remember half the matches. I was out of falling asleep.
Okay, well, there was the Universal title handicap match, which was the Miz and Morrison versus Braun Strowman.
Right.
Before that match, Miz and John Morrison were informed that whoever pins or if someone pins or submits Braun Strowman, that person will become the sole Universal champion, not like a co-Universal championship. So really, it was a triple threat match.
Right.
Not a handicap match.
Okay. But
That caused some tension between Miz and Morrison in the match, because there was a part where John Morrison was going to get the pin on Braun Strowman and Miz just pulled him off. And then they just kind of stood there and looked at each other and then like held their heads and they're like, oh my God, what did I just do? And they're like, oh, yeah, pin him again. And Strowman kicked out and eventually pinned one of them. It was a very quick match, kind of a throwaway match. And more of a comedy spot than anything.
Oh, okay. That's what you want for your world title. You don't want comedy in your world title matches. Like, I don't even think that shouldn't even be an old school mentality. That should be just like, because that's your main event and all that. Yeah, that's what everyone comes out. But you know,
it was. Like, that's what the 24/7 title is for, comedy stuff.
Right.
But yeah, Braun Strowman won, and he stood on the ramp, held up his championship, did his little yelling thing that he does, and that was it. That was no follow up. No, I thought for sure that Bray Wyatt or The Fiend was going to come out and attack Braun Strowman after that match, but that didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
But.
Do you think it's too early to split Miz and Morrison already? If that's where they're going?
If they can keep the comedy thing going. I think they're a good comedy duo. Like, they do some funny stuff, in my opinion. But I don't know. I think it is a little too soon to split them up again. Because they've only been back together for what? Like, since November? I guess, well.
Yeah, November, December.
Yeah, give him another. I'd say give him till, like, after they've been together for a year, maybe.
Yeah.
Break up, but yeah, there was also a women's tag team title match, triple threat. It was Sasha and Bayley defending against the Iconics and Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, which, yeah, obviously Sasha and Bayley won after. Yeah, Sasha did the surprise roll up on Alexa Bliss after Alexa hit one of the Iconics with her finishing move. So,
okay.
You know, the most devastating move in all of sports entertainment, the surprise roll up.
Yeah.
I was kind of cheering for the Iconics in that one. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, even though like every team in that match had been women's tag team champions before.
Yeah.
So that kind of took a little bit away from the excitement. I always like it when someone who hasn't been champion before goes up against or challenges for a title. Because that, that always adds, and adds a little something.
You hot potato these titles, it's going to lose its luster.
Yep.
For sure. I have to admit, when I heard that they were turning Bayley heel, I thought, okay, there is just some people that cannot be heels, no matter what you do. And for the longest time, I just didn't believe it. But the last little while, she's actually turning into a good bitch.
She plays the despicable, the despicable person role quite well.
It kind of gives you that impression. And we knew these girls in high school. Like, we knew Bailey, we knew Sasha in high school. And there was the one that was the bitch.
Okay. Yeah.
And then there was the friend who was doing her best to try to be a bitch to impress bitch number one. And Bailey is doing all she can to try to live up to the bitchiness of her friend and all that. Like, we knew these girls in high school.
Right.
He did. And geez.
We know some now.
No doubt. But I think she's definitely coming along in that. And I honestly didn't think, okay, this is not going to work. They're going to be turning her back and soon enough and just forget it never happened and all that. But no, it's coming along nicely.
There was the WWE Championship match between Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley, and the way that it started off so promising too, because before the bell even rang, before he could get his coat off, Bobby Lashley put Drew McIntyre in the full Nelson, and he had it locked in, and it looked like he was gonna weaken Drew McIntyre. And throughout the entire match, you kind of had this it was kind of in the back of your head. It's like, I don't think Bobby Lashley's gonna win, but he might now more than ever, they were pushing him similarly to his character in TNA.
Right.
The Walking Armageddon, I believe. But
yeah, I think
the match was really good until Lana came out. Yeah. And then,
oh yeah, the chick's got to come up and gum up the works.
Lana came out, she got on the apron and started yelling at the referee, and then she got bumped off into MVP, and then Drew claymored Bobby and won the match, and then they MVP and Lashley just kind of looked at Lana and just left her there, walked away. And then the next night on Raw, I think Lashley demanded a divorce from Lana.
Means Lana's gonna be off TV soon.
Perhaps. They seem to have started an angle between her and Natalia where they're going to both be heel, like a heel team, it seems. But I guess we'll see where that goes.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I guess I got to start watching Raw a little bit more.
But after that, there was supposed to be a Raw tag team title match, but then it turned into this. I don't even know what to call it. What would you call it, Dustin? Cinematic fever dream.
I thought it was kind of cool until the end.
Oh, when they were in the dumpster? When the ninjas came out?
When both? They were in the dumpster and then the tentacle creature came out of it. And it was just that's a Vince thing right there.
I think that was an alligator tail. I don't think it was a tentacle. I could be wrong.
Either way, that's a Mr. McMahon. All of this will be funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So you called this a cinematic fever dream. So like,
because it started off with them like walking in the parking lot, and then they just started fighting out of nowhere, and they got weapons. There was bowling balls, and yeah, they were fighting throughout the performance center. And then at one point, like at a couple different points, Ivar started daydreaming about different things, whether it was like turkey legs or girls calling him cute or I don't know, other like them winning the certain sporting events from the Anything You Can Do, We Can Do Better series that they've had on Raw for the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Did you actually see what he was dreaming? Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, there was a part where he rolled a bowling ball right in between Montez Ford's legs. You know, the old nut shot with a bowling ball.
Right.
Yeah.
The old what Al Snow used to do in hardcore matches.
Oh, yeah. Except it was pre-shot, so nobody actually got hurt.
Yeah. Did they follow up on? I didn't watch SmackDown, but did they follow up when they destroyed the windshield of Braun Strowman's car and they were all like, "Oh shit, this is his car!" And they all just ran. Oh. Guys, we gotta go.
They never did.
That's dumb.
Yeah, but there was
funny though because they're like, "Guys, this is Braun Strowman's car." She's like, "Oh crap! Yeah. Oh no!"
Yeah, that was a pretty funny part of it, but. What was it near around the end when they were all in the parking lot, and then just like a gang of people rolls up on these motorcycles, and then one takes off his helmet, and it was Akira Tozawa, and he's got this army of ninjas with him, all on motorcycles. So the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders team up for this little I don't even know this pseudo. Stable called the Viking Prophets, I think they were called.
Yep, the Viking Prophets.
Yeah, and then they were fighting off all the ninjas. And then Akira Tozawa.
All that went through my mind.
Yeah.
When the guys on the bikes rolled up, I'm like, let me guess, this is going to be racist Vince going, let's do a Japanese guy and a ninja gimmick again. And then when Akira Tozawa took the mat, when as soon as the helmet came off, I'm like. Yep, good old racist Vince. Here we go.
But then, after they fought off all the ninjas, Akira Tozawa brought in this 7 foot, over 7 foot tall ninja who whipped out a katana. And then, like, after he did that, they're all staring him down. And Eric from the Viking Raiders goes, I got this one. And they're all like, no, you don't. No, you don't.
And then he, like, used the force to, like, get a chicken wing off the ground.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
He got the turkey leg, kind of like how Thor would summon Mjolnir.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And then, then they eventually wound up in a dumpster and the alligator or tentacle or whatever the hell that thing was came in. And then it just sort of ended.
Yeah.
And then they announced that the Raw Tag Team title match would not be taking place. And then after that, we witnessed.
This is what happens when you have television writers, not wrestling people, doing your booking.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens when you have writers instead of Booker.
Exactly. People who have been wrestling before come into the company and making creative decisions.
You think that with Bruce Pritchard, he'd actually have good ideas?
He's really the biggest Vince McMahon yes man.
That's true, yeah. And at least it's not Russo booking.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
God forbid. But now that Bruce Pritchard is both the lead or head booker or lead writer or whatever you want to call him for both Raw and SmackDown now, so we can expect to see a lot of the same shit on both shows now.
Oh God. All right. All right.
Well, time will tell. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I enjoyed where Heyman was taking Raw. Yeah. And a lot of the people he was pushing were people that I was behind, like Apollo Crews, Asuka, and Aleister Black. But now, who knows if Asuka's even going to be championed by this Monday?
Oh yeah, because she's facing Charlotte, right?
Stupid. Yep. Yeah. So who knows? Charlotte might get another title, and Aleister Black hasn't been on Raw for the last couple weeks, and who knows what's going to happen with Apollo Crews. So, yeah, like I said, time will tell.
Yep.
But fair enough.
After that, we got what the main advertisement of the show, which was the greatest wrestling match ever between Randy Orton. Yeah, between two dudes in their 40s. Randy Orton, who only wrestles a good match when he can give a shit. When he can be bothered. And Edge, who hasn't wrestled a proper wrestling match in 9 years.
Okay. The thing that's kind of getting on, and I'll get my shit out of the way with this, but just right from the start, the greatest wrestling match ever. Not forget Savage Steamboat at WrestleMania 3, you know. forget
Michaels from WrestleMania 25.
Yeah, like never mind that. It's like Flair Steamboat, those trilogy of matches. No. What we need is this is the greatest match of all time, and it's not even a fucking match.
No. It was pre-taped.
Yeah,
it was good. It was a good match, but like greatest
ever.
Yeah. Like, I think they were setting themselves up to fail right from the start.
I feel that the whole thing calling it the greatest wrestling match ever was just Vince McMahon trolling the hardcore wrestling fans.
It's got to be.
He knew that they were going to be like, oh, this is going to piss off so many people. It's great. But they're going to watch it anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They're going to watch it to see if it actually will be.
Yeah. And it was the only pre-tape match on the show, aside from whatever that Viking Raiders Street Profits thing was. But okay. Yeah, it was pre-taped, and there was they used some unique camera angles that you would usually only see in a movie, but they didn't overdo that part. No, the thing that they did add, though, that was a little weird was piped in crowd noises.
Even though there were people?
Yeah, there were only like maybe, 12 people in the audience, but it did not sound like there was 12 people in the audience.
No. Right. Yeah, well, so I think something like that, you're just supposed to hear it subconsciously. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that extra crowd noise. No, but like
it's the generic fucking crowd noise things that they added to, where it's just like when I used to do like when I was in school, I used to do like stop motion with wrestling figures. And it was the generic crowd noises that I fucking used, and I'm like, really?
It sounded like the crowd in like a wrestling video game.
Yeah.
One of these days they're gonna pipe in the wrong crowd noise, and you're gonna hear some little old lady yelling, "You suck, Piper!"
That'd be funny.
It would be funny.
No, but what was like when it would happen? It's like you would hear like a bunch of people clapping, and then no one in the crowd's clapping.
Oh wow!
Or they would show a
and
certain.
And then there was the part. And then you there was a part where Samoa Joe was doing commentary, and they had a camera angle on the commentators, and Joe wasn't talking.
Holy jeez!
Yeah, that's one of the that's something that's bound to happen when you're pre-taping a wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
He's not live.
Yeah,
but yeah, so I can forgive that part. I wish they would have been a little more judicious about the angles they were filming at. For that, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Take it as it is.
Okay, so yeah, who won the world's greatest match or
Ben Smack. The greatest wrestling match ever.
I can't even say it with a straight face.
Orton won.
Okay. All right.
At the beginning.
And Edge tore his tricep, didn't he?
Yes, he tore his tricep. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Here's the kicker. He tore his tricep in a reshoot of a
reshoot.
Spot.
Yes. What the hell are reshoots in a wrestling match?
Well, you have to get a certain angle.
like that, the irony is so delicious there because it's like the match is over. Okay, fine. Well, boys, we got to go back and we got to do some reshoots here. What? Okay, first of all, whatever the hell that means. And then he gets hurt doing that. I mean, when you get hurt in a match, this ain't ballet, okay? Like, it happens, okay? Mm-hmm. But to get hurt doing this bullshit when it was already finished? Like, come on, you guys.
Yeah, they needed to get certain moves at a different angle, a different camera angle that they couldn't get before. And yeah, unfortunately, that led to Edge getting hurt. But at the beginning of the match, when they came out, they did the introduction that they did. Like, first of all, Charles Robinson was the referee, and he wasn't dressed in the striped shirt like they have now, or have had for a while. He actually had his old like blue long sleeve button up shirt with the bow tie, like the referees used to wear in WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was a kind of a little added touch that I thought was a little bit cool, and the intros, the intros, they didn't have their current ring announcer doing the intros. Like the bell rang and then the lights went out and then they played a little bit of that theme song they used for the pay-per-view. And then they had the old Madison Square Garden microphone came down and you could hear, they played Howard Finkel's voice introducing both Edge and Orton.
Oh, okay. I can get behind that.
Yeah. Because I guess they obviously have several recordings of him introducing both guys over.
Right.
The,
yep. Yeah.
That part right. was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The old Madison Square Garden microphones that would hang from the ceiling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those came down and yeah, you just heard Fink's voice and I was just like, oh, okay. Well, that's, I guess that, so that this will be the technically the last match that Howard Finkel ever calls or introduces, I should say.
Right.
That was a nice little trinket, but the ending of the match, it was Orton won by kind of I think he did what he knee Edge, he low blowed Edge with a knee when the referee wasn't looking, and then after that he brought back that punt kick that he was using about 10 years ago when he was like the super heel on Raw. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but he was like, incapacitating people with the punt kick, so he's. He's brought that back now. He used that to finish off Edge after Edge kicked out of two RKOs. And each guy hit each other with like a bunch of other people's finishing moves. Like Randy.
Orton pedigreed Edge rock bottomed Randy.
Yeah. I think someone hit it. I think, did someone do an Olympic slam? Randy. If I remember. Randy did an Olympic slam to Edge. Yeah. Okay. And I think Edge tried to do a sharpshooter at one point.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, it got reversed. So they were like really towards the end of the match, they were like throwing in just like everybody's finishing moves to try and like, I don't know, like pay homage, mm-hmm. I suppose, to all these previous wrestlers. And then, yeah, the end of the match came when, yeah, it was a low blow and a punt kick. And then, yeah, that was it. Edge was lying on the mat while Orton's music was playing. And then Orton was just like telling him, he's like, go home, Adam. Go home and be with your kids. Be with your wife. Just leave. Just leave.
Mm-hmm. Tell them Uncle Randy says hi.
Yeah. Yeah. there was one point in the match where Edge was laying on the announcer's table and Orton leaned over him and whispered in his ear. And you could hear it very clearly. He said, I'm going to fucking kill you, motherfucker. they didn't censor. It was pre-taped, keep in mind. And they didn't censor it.
Right. Well, it's on the network. You can say whatever the hell you want.
A PG-rated product. A guy said, I'm going to fucking kill you, motherfucker.
Hey, it's the real world, you know, where the F-bombs happen. Yeah. Okay. Which begs the question. We all totally marked out when Adam Copeland showed up, when Edge came back and all that. But with the injury and all that, and he is getting up there and family man now and all that, is it time? Is it time that he fucked off?
Well, he's got a 3-year deal. So he's
going to be gone for like 8 months with this tricep tear.
So. Yeah, four to 8 months, depending on how bad it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's only 6 months into his 3-year deal. So he's still got 2.5 more years. And depending on, yeah.
Wow. Okay. I mean, there's stuff that he can do. You know, like on air stuff. But like, come on. Like, I don't think he needs to be potatoed anymore. Like, he's done his time. Thank you for all that you've given us.
No, I don't think he needs like another world title run. No, he's already had 11, and he retired as world champion.
Okay, wow, I don't even remember him holding it 11 times, but wow, they're
very short reigns in a very short amount of time.
But, right. Yeah. Right. So,
overall, I was entertained by the quote unquote greatest wrestling match ever, but whether or not it was not the greatest wrestling match ever. Not by a lot.
I imagine not.
Killed it for me, was the fucking adding in the crowd shit. That killed it for me.
Yeah. I don't know. I found that if I wasn't really paying attention, it kind of just like seemed like your normal everyday wrestling match. Like, right. If you could ignore the plexiglass around the ring.
Yeah. Right. Should that match have been like 35 minutes? No. But
holy jeez, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty long, but had they have not attached the tagline and built up the match the way they did, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Right.
I knew that it was never going to be legitimately the greatest ever.
No, it's not Flair Dusty at the Omni. No.
Yeah, that was marketing 101 right there. Like, but like, I enjoyed it overall. I thought it was the most entertaining match on the card, being all things considered that it wasn't the only, or it was the only non-live match.
Right.
But yeah, overall, Backlash 2020 was not great.
Okay, so that was going to be my next thing. Backlash, yeah. Horns up, horns down, horns in the middle.
Horns down.
Yeah.
Overall, but one match out of however many there were that were actually good. And even that one had its own questionable little bells and whistles. But yeah, it was a throwaway pay-per-view. In my opinion.
You know when I get bored watching wrestling, when I'm like falling in and out of sleep watching it?
Yeah, that can't be a good thing. Now, I understand, like, I've fallen asleep watching amazing matches, but that's because I just busted my ass all day at work. And when your body says it's time, no matter what you're doing. But
yeah,
if you're well rested and you're still nodding off, as you heard from the opening bell tonight, Fitz kind of hitting the shan here in the world of pro wrestling. It's getting kind of scary. Like we said, even in just the last couple of days, this speaking out movement is gaining traction just as more and more of these allegations, of these incidences are coming out. And like I believe we said at the top of the hop as well, it was very, very reminiscent of the Me Too movement. And this is obviously kind of, I don't want to say influence, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's definitely in the same spirit where, you know, pro wrestling obviously doesn't have that Teflon that we kind of think it does, because we don't see what goes on, you know, when the camera's off, when the wrestlers go through the curtain and all that, and they're living their lives, they don't see what's going on. But You know, and it is 2020. We are in the Me Too generation now, for the better. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually heard criticisms about the Me Too movement, and there are going to be a lot of criticisms about the speaking out movement and all that. And personally, you have to really dig, and you have to put a lot of effort to try to debunk these movements and all that. And unfortunately, it's where we are. And the disturbing thing about the whole thing is in just a couple of days, it was just like one incident after another. And it's like, oh my God, it's here. It's here. Yeah. And we have to do something about this. And for the most part, it looks like, you know, the world of professional wrestling is taking care of its own in this situation. And in light of this whole movement, some of the names and all that, like, it was just, and we're not passing judgment. We're not going to say, you know, all of this is alleged and all that. Like, but when you get presented with photographic and snapshots, when you get presented, you know, with evidence, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to look the other way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's like so many people in the, not just the British wrestling scene, but that's how it started, was in the British wrestling scene. But there have been names from all over the world that have come to light in these allegations, and it's disappointing to see some of the names, because I know a lot of people are going to see names of some of their favorites, some of their heroes, and it's difficult to accept, mm-hmm. that your favorite wrestler is not a good human being. And I'm not going to say that, like, I don't know.
it's tough just talking about it. Like, we're not even involved in any of these allegations. Like,
no, it's
the
it's,
three it's of terrible. Us. We're stand up guys.
Yeah.
Just to talk about this. It's tough. It really is. One of the things. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, because the incident that came out with Velveteen Dream, okay, like, yeah, a couple episodes ago, it kind of came out, and we were quick to believe it just because of everything, but then it seemed like there was evidence that this shit really wasn't happening, but now it's come out in full force, like, there's a lot of evidence against him and what he's been doing, like, with minors, you know? So we kind of have to, you know, look at ourselves, not necessarily, you know, like, since this is a wrestling show, like, the three of us, we have to go, you fucked up into the mirror, I think, with that one.
Yeah.
you know, and because, like, these are allegations, you know, against minors, that's particularly disturbing.
Oh yeah, it's disturbing no matter what, but
but
the whole minors thing is, like, it's disgusting. To sum it up in one word, it's disgusting, and it's disappointing, and it's these performers that you've looked up to and admired, like, for months, if not years, having this, and, like, like, Velveteen, as well as, like, some other names on the lists that have come out, have, like, there a lot of, some of my favorites have been outed, and it's tough. Like, as I've said before, it's disappointing, and, like, now saying their names kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth, even though at this point it is strictly allegations.
Because you kind of just with everything that went down with Me Too and all that, like, you kind of know in the back of your head, okay, yeah, they're just allegations. And we're going to say allegation a lot just to protect ourselves. But we also know in the back of our heads, this is probably true. Yeah, you know, the progress promotion, operation, yeah. half the roster is gone. Like, all their champions have been stripped and.
Yeah, David Starr has been, he was accused, and I think, he didn't admit to being a predator, but he did admit to doing bad things. So he's been fired by Progress, and he's been stripped of their World Heavyweight Championship.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a number of people. Jordan Devlin.
Yeah. He was one half of the Progress Tag Team Champions. And he's also the current NXT Cruiserweight champion. And yeah, he's been accused of these things. And I should also say that anybody who's has allegations against them in WWE has been at this point suspended. And if they are convicted, they will be immediately terminated. That's right. Where they stand right now. And which really, that's what you can do at this point. All you can really do at this point as a company. And what else? Jack Gallagher, he had an allegation against him, but he came out and admitted that it was true. And as a result, he has been released from WWE effective immediately.
Yeah. And where do you go from there? Like, when you've admitted I was a piece of shit, you know,
you don't come back from that.
Because AEW is not going to pick you up.
Nope. But, you know? The thing about AEW had, Jimmy Havoc was, two girls came out about him. Recently. And, the things that I've heard about him that he did were nothing short of disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And, as of right now, he is suspended from AEW, but he has entered a rehab facility. But it is illegal in the state of Florida to fire anybody if they are entered into a rehab program. So, because they did say that they were gonna evaluate his status with the company upon his completion of rehab. So I don't know if they sent him to rehab or if he went to rehab himself. It was all kind of very vague.
Right. So after he comes out of rehab, when the smoke clears on Havoc's case, probably the best thing for them to do and the right thing is to say, okay, you know what? We can't have you on board, like, because I don't want to support, you know, a league that knowingly harbors, you know, this type of activity and covers it up and accepts it, because I certainly don't accept it with some of this though. And you kind of, unfortunately, it's to the point where you automatically believe the victim, because chances are, you know, it turns out there's a lot of scummy guys out there. You know, we kind of have to admit it, but we are getting some cases where, I don't know. I'm looking at the Matt Riddle case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm kind of leaning towards what he's saying. Like, what's the story there again? He, a fan, a rat, whatever, ex.
It was a female independent wrestler.
Oh, okay.
Used him. Her name at the moment escapes me, but Matt Riddle's attorney issued a statement or a press release regarding Matt Riddle yesterday, saying the allegations by this independent female performer are completely false and another attempt to harass and humiliate Mr. and Mrs. Riddle and try to tarnish their reputation in the community. We have been aware of the last few years of this performer stalking the Riddle family. In 2019, our firm had drafted a pleading against the performer to seek an injunction for the cyber stalking in the Circuit Court of Orange County, Florida.
Right, right. Okay, so there is a history, a documented history of, you know, Riddle has had issues with this person and all that. So that's the smoking gun against these allegations. There's a history of this. This isn't, you know, there was an incident and now she's finally getting the strength, the courage now to come forward in light of, you know, of in light of this new movement and all that. Like there's documentary history of the man's innocence. So I'm kind of leaning towards Riddle in that case.
It's hard. It's hard. Like you can't say, like it's really hard to, I'm being as unbiased as I can. Like, because there is no proof on, no solid, no, I don't know. It's,
yeah, this one's a little tough. Fortunately, it's not an allegation that you can believe right off the hop. Like, there's actually, you know, they say there's two sides to every story. There actually is another side to this one.
Yes, exactly. There's,
yeah.
Yeah, a documented side or an other side to this story, and this is really difficult to talk about. It's very uncomfortable. Yeah. But
it really is.
Yeah.
It really is. One of the things that kind of caught my eye, being an old schooler myself, are these allegations of against Jim Cornette and his wife Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
The allegation is apparently, like, the Cornettes have this weird sexual kink where they kind of get off on other men having sex with her. Okay. And like, okay, that in itself, okay, whatever, you do you. Okay. But apparently there's been allegations that during all his time in OVW and all that, he was using, you know, people's careers, you know, we'll help you out. We'll get you a contract, you know, and if you don't listen to us, if you don't do what we want, we can make your life difficult, you know, through our stature and our connections and all that.
Essentially blackmailing these people.
Right.
These wrestlers.
You know, when you're a young wrestler, you're young, dumb, full of cum and all that, and all you're doing, you know, when you're not training, all you're doing is looking for action, which a lot of guys, never mind being a wrestler, that's what young guys do, you know, that are unattached and all that. Like,
he's like, he's taking advantage of young people who are easy to manipulate.
Right.
That's the problem. Like, that's, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, later on, they start to realize that this is not okay.
Right.
That this happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be rough. It's got to be rough. We're glad that, you know, we could have done all that. We've done all that we can in this situation, because, like, I hate that feeling of helplessness.
You know, yes.
Like I wish, what can we do? Like, yes, we have this podcast, but we're still kind of, you know, minimal in what we can do. But at least at the end of the day, when I put my head down on my pillow tonight, I know we did something.
We brought, so. If at the end of the day, if we could only just, like, bring attention to this movement, get more ears and eyes to listen to the people who have come out, and shed a little bit of light on the goings on, and hopefully make the wrestling world a safer place for everybody.
I think this is a good start.
Ultimately, yeah, that's what I'm hoping that we can accomplish. And as far as, I forget who said it, but They did say that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and in the effort of bringing these to light, I believe that's relevant now more than ever.
Oh, yeah. By the time this goes to air, there's going to be more and more and more. And then after this episode, you know, is out there, there's going to be more. And it's just, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Hopefully, though, next episode of Wrestling Night in Canada, we'll be a little more upbeat. Maybe we'll have something a little more entertaining, you know, to bring to our listeners. But sometimes, you know, you gotta step up. You gotta step up, you know. And yeah, I think we did that today.
It's unfortunate that these things happen, but the fact of the matter is that they do happen. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
For sure.
As long as we've served our purpose of like bringing more attention to it, to the movement, then yeah.
Then it worked. Yeah. It just goes to show exactly how tough this episode was. So extra horns up to us. How can people, like, what are our social medias again? We should throw some of those out there before we get on out of here. We're on Facebook.
Yes, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/WrestlingNightInCanada and on Instagram at WrestlingNightInCanada.
Right on, right on. Of course, Wrestling Night in Canada is a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. That's probably where, you know, you've discovered us, but if you just happen to find us on Spotify, just a random search or whatever, be sure to check out all of our brother episodes, our brother programs on the Shining Wizards Network. There's a number of other pro wrestling podcasts, as well as some comedy, pop culture. And of course, if you want some more of your cool Uncle Snowy here, I'm hosting Radioactive Metal.
I will also the Shining get Wizards. Around to making the Twitter.
Oh, we need a Twitter page.
Yeah.
Right on.
I'll do that this weekend.
Okay. Excellent. So check everyone out in all of that. And in the meantime and in between time, that's it. This has been, well, I don't know how exciting it was, but it's definitely been a very special episode of Wrestling Night in Canada.
Sometimes you gotta talk about the serious shit, man.
Sometimes you do.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
I'm Ducky.
Signing off.
We're from Winnipeg, you idiots.